All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome once again. We are back with Talk Tuesdays. Thank you so much for you know, tuning in. This is, you know, always a wonderful opportunity. Today with me, I've got Liam, you know, and Liam's up to a lot of wonderful stuff, you know, being in the mental health space, you know, with our startup with Mental Health AE. We cross paths. I'm actually not going to tell you too much. I'm going to let him do the talking and tell you a little bit about, you know, who he is, you know, where's he coming from, what he's all about, what he's working with. Of course, drop your questions in the chat. If you're on Insta Live, you can connect directly onto Zoom if you want also, or even on Insta Live, you can drop in any text or chat messages that you have and we'll pick them up from there. Liam.
Yeah. So my name is Liam Kelly, and I'm the author, creator of the Worried William Project. It's really a project aimed at raising the awareness of children's mental health. I suffered a lot as a child in silence because I was scared to admit that I was a child who was going through certain emotions. I never talked to anybody. I never talked to a single person, actually. I didn't tell my teacher, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister. I didn't tell anybody. And it wasn't until I was 37 that I was able to find the confidence to actually say, in fact, I was 38. I was 37 when I had written the first Worried William book. But I was 38 when I finally acknowledged that Worried William is me. I suffered as a child. I accepted my worries, and I started the healing process, because up until that time, I kind of didn't admit it. I didn't want to admit it. I didn't want to admit that I had anxiety. I didn't want to admit that I had challenges in life, because like I said before, and it's like many young people, girls or boys, you feel ashamed. And The Worried William series is basically a book series about a little boy that talks about his challenges going through school. And when I had first written the first book, I had just written it as a little boy, but I didn't want to admit that it was me. And it wasn't until maybe until it was basically published where I said to people, this is me, this is who I was. And, you know, it's... For any child, you know, to admit that they are going through worries and anxieties, it's difficult. You know, don't ever think as a parent that, you know, that it's easy for a child, even if they're 5 or 6, 7, 8, 9. Don't ever think that it's an easy process, because I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart that it's difficult to admit that you're suffering and you're experiencing challenges. So When your child is telling you, you know, I am going through, I'm scared, you know, don't always react with words. Sometimes the best advice can just be a hug, you know, just saying a hug can just be the best thing that they need. And when I was 6, when I had my first worry, that's all I wanted from my mom was just a hug. But the problem was that I couldn't tell her. And I'm going to go through chronologically, if that's okay with you, Ali. And if we run out of time, say to me, we've got 2 minutes left, and wrap it up, because, you know, I don't want to talk and overwhelm people with everything. But I was 6 years old when I experienced my first worry. And I can remember that worry like it was yesterday. And basically, the Worried William Project, provisionally, I've got 168 books with the publisher, and they're all going to be starting to be released from September. And I'm in a very fortunate position where I can tell my story. You know, there's not many people have the opportunity to work with publishers to tell their story. But let's get back to the story in the classroom. So I was a little boy, 6 years old. My teacher had given me spellings. We had 10 spellings, as you normally do. You go to school, your teacher gives you spellings. At the start of the week, you learn them. The next week, you have to get 10 out of 10. Mom and dad always expect 10 out of 10. And, you know, if you don't get 10 out of 10, it's the case of, why didn't you get 10 out of 10? And And so the pressure's on you even before you do your spelling test. So this one particular day, my teacher was a big, big, tall teacher, and she kind of wasn't a frightening teacher, but her height was very frightening. And she had asked, I always sat at the back of the room because I like to hide behind people. And that's an indicator as well, you know, of a child who might be experiencing social anxiety or worries. So I sat at the back of the room, and the teacher had, I'm not going to say her name because it's not her fault. And throughout this whole talk, I won't mention names because it's very important that I'm not blaming anyone for anything that's happened to me in my life. And that's important, you know, as well, because it's not about blame. It's just who I was. So the teacher had asked me to walk to the front of the room to say a particular word. And the word was look, L-O-O-K. So, you know, it might seem very straightforward to a lot of people, but I walked to the front of the room and I kind of started to feel my heart going very, you know, start going quickly. And I started to get these sweats. And, you know, when you're really nervous, you get really anxious. And I went to the front of the room and I looked around and everybody's looking at me. And suddenly my head got very light and I started to say the word look, but it didn't come out. It kind of came out like, and believe it or not, for 2 years, I developed a stammer because of that incident. And the word come out and everyone started to laugh at me. And, it can get very emotional very still, you know. So
it's all right, man. Take your time.
It come out, I actually didn't think I would get emotional at this point. I thought it might have been a bit later, but everyone started to laugh at me, and I kind of, all I wanted to do was hug my mom, you know. So, you know, I'm 6 years old, and I'm starting to experience these difficulties, and I go home and my mom asks me a few questions, as moms and dads generally do, you know. They say to you, how was school? So I'm 6 years old and I said, yeah, it was great. Because I didn't want to alarm my mom. I didn't want to say to my mom, I got laughed at. I was crying inside, you know, because you want to make your mom proud of you. So even at such a young age, it was quite difficult. So, I'm really sorry if I got upset there, but you know, sometimes it can get quite emotional, you know. So if you can imagine being a 6 years old and people laughing at you, and you know, some children in the classroom are very confident, and you know, that's amazing. But even though we have very confident children at home and in our classroom, we still need to teach the children who are very confident how to treat other children who aren't so confident. You know, we need to try and teach them compassion, you know, and empathy. And you know, that's very important. And that's what my whole project's about. It's just not about, you know, helping children who may be worrying. It's for all children. You know, it's a very inclusive program. It's for children of determination, you know, because every child's important in my eyes. I didn't want to be classified as a child who worried, but, you know, I just wanted to be like everybody else. So from an early age of 6 years old, I developed these worries, and, you know, and even from that very early age, I was always keen to impress people. I put people before myself. I put extra things in my packed lunch to really, really give to other people. So I was always really trying to impress people. I always tried to you know, do what everybody else was doing. I guess I was the follower, you know. I was never the leader of the pack. I didn't want to upset anybody. And, you know, and like from the age of six, my mom always thought I was happy at school because moms and dads ask three questions, like every day. How was school? Who'd you play with? You know, any homework? And, you know, all you have to say when I was younger was, school was great, no homework, play with everybody, mom and dad was very happy, you know. And, you know, but before we go any further, it's very important that it's not my mom's fault. You know, my mom's a great lady. She was one of my heroes. So I don't want anyone to, you know, start judging my mom or my dad or anything like that, because I think society in those days didn't allow us as people to be very open and honest. And, you know, this is the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because no child deserves to suffer in silence. No child at all. And, you know, I'm here to help parents as well as children. And I think as well as parents, you know, I'm going to give you some little tips of things that I used to do that proved that I was experiencing challenges, and some of the things that you could look out for with your own children, because I think that's important as well. You know, this talk isn't solely about me. It's not about Worried William. It's about children in general. You know, what can you do to help your children? Because that's what I'm about. You know, I dedicate my life now to this whole project. And one of the things that I noticed when I was younger was that my emotions were very, very up and down, you know, and, as parents, we really need to be able to classify the difference between emotions and feelings. You know, what is an emotion and what is a feeling? Because, you know, the emotion is the impact, and the feeling is the long-term effect. And you can't always ask your child about the emotion, because emotion will change throughout the day into that feeling. So the feeling will change. And when I was younger, parents generally only talked about the emotion, but by the time the evening time had come or the night time, my emotion had changed drastically. And when I got to bed at night, you know, even at 6 years old or seven, I would always hug my mom at night. My mom and I were very close, and we would hug each other. But when she left the room, I used to cry a lot, because I was never able to tell her the truth. And, you know, it's because I guess I didn't know how to tell her. I just didn't know how. There was no dialogue, you know. And I think we're very lucky in today's society where we were able to have these conversations, you know, the conversations about the emotions and the words that we can use. But many, many years ago, and I'm going back 30 years ago, a very long time ago, and I just didn't know how to say to my mom, I'm scared. People laughed at me, because I didn't know her reaction. And so from the age of 6 to 9, I was very, you know, I was very lonely and alone inside, but I always had a smile. I always had a smile, because that's what people wanted. My teachers wanted a smile. My mom wanted a smile. My dad wanted a smile. So all I had to do was smile, and that was what kept people happy. But I think the one person that was possibly being neglected was myself. You know, I didn't know how to look after myself. And as parents, we need to be able to teach our children how to self-care as well. You know, we need to be able to teach our children, how do we look after ourselves as children? You know, what do we do? If we are feeling vulnerable, if we are feeling emotional, what do we do? Who do we talk to? And it's really about trusting. You know, if you're 6, 7, 8, 9, even 13, you have to go to someone you trust. Because when I look back in my life, you know, if I'm a young person and I go to someone and they tell somebody else, I've lost the trust, and I'll never tell anybody again. So you have to, when a child tells you something, you have to be able to help them and trust them. There has to be trust. The trust is key. So when a child tells you something, and believe me, when a child is telling you something, that takes a lot of courage. I mean, that's one of the bravest things that a child can ever tell you, a teenager, or even someone in their 20s or their 30s, you know, or even a friend in their 40s. Believe it or not, you know, when somebody tells you something that's challenging them and emotional, it takes a lot of courage. So if you think of a child who's, you know, below 10 and then a teenager, think of the courage it takes for them to tell you that. So, and for me, it's about understanding what they're going through. it's not a case of why didn't you tell me or why didn't you tell your teacher. It's really about the listening aspect, you know, listen to what they're saying to you. Because when a child is telling you something, never ever dismiss what they're telling you, because it's important to them. They're getting it off their chest. It's a release for them. So well, when they're telling you, I'm scared, someone laughed at me, you know, just listen, try and understand what they're trying to tell you. And, you know, sometimes just give them that hug. And believe it or not, you know, when I look back in my younger years, I guess that's all I wanted. That's, you know, I just wanted my mom's hug, you know. I think, you know, it's about when you're a mom and you're a dad, and you know that your child is going through a challenge, you know, it's about the listening and understanding. But if anything that you take away from today's meeting, you know, the greatest gift, and it's not about going to the Lego shop or the Virgin, the best gift that you can give your child is your time, you know, one-to-one time. You know, the time is key. You know, you can give them everything, you know, computers, bicycles, whatever. But what your child really wants is you, your undivided attention, you know, one-to-one. And that's key. You know, the matter what they're asking for, they just want your attention. And when I go home to Ireland now to visit my mom, we go for coffee all the time and we just talk. You know, we just talk, and it's so amazing. We talk about things perhaps we should have talked about 20 years ago, but it was just that so long ago, I just didn't know how to tell her. So she will ask me questions now about, you know, perhaps how did you feel then? And I'm very open and honest about it now. And that's the whole purpose of the Worried William Project. It's about helping parents and children. It's a voice. It's a voice for children to say, hey, I am a little bit emotional today. Hey, I am scared. I'm not embarrassed anymore. I don't feel ashamed of how I'm feeling. This is who I am. I want to hug you. I want to tell you how I'm feeling. So I'm very fortunate that I'm able to use my past experiences now to have this big book contract. And believe it or not, you know, I take this provisional contract with so much humbleness, and I'm so proud of it. But I do not want my name on a billboard. I don't want any of that. All I want to do is help children who are suffering, because I know how it feels. I know how it feels to go to bed at night, crying your eyes out, and waking up in the morning and thinking, how am I going to get through this day? Are people still going to laugh at me? You know, so this whole project, although I might write the books, it's our project. It's me and every single child in the world who are doing this together, and all the people like Ali and Latifa who are really helping me go through this and help our children. But, you know, there are children out there who are vulnerable and who might just need your help. A vulnerable child will never come to you and say, hey, I'm scared. I'm feeling emotional today. You know, sometimes children want you to approach them, you know, and that's what I wanted sometimes my mom to do to me. But again, like I said, society didn't allow that those days, you know. I always felt that.
Liam, sorry to interrupt you here, but I think you're 100% right. And I would love to say that we're better today than we were, you know, let's say 20, 30 odd years ago.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the case. And I think there's multiple stakeholders and multiple facets to this, as you rightfully said. A lot of it is of course, the child themselves and, you know, how much bravery it takes to take that step and just to even say something. But well before that, you know, and I've seen this, especially with the lockdown and, you know, my kids are stuck at home. I've raised these kids, right? So I know them from like when they were 0 years of age, you know, and diapers. So yeah. I know their mentality. I know their personalities, and things are just off. And, you know, agitation was there, short temperedness was there, and you know, like little snapbacks were coming. I'm like, what's going on? This is not, this is not this kid, and this is not this kid. I think a lot of that listening happens before the listening, where you kind of look at the kid and you say the behavior isn't matching up. They're trying. Yeah. You can almost sense that they're wanting to say something, but they don't even know what they want to say.
Yeah.
And let alone, even if they want to say it, they don't have the courage to say it. So I think half of that listening, whether it's a parent or whether it's a teacher or if you're an older sibling, I think you pause, take a moment, observe the child and kind of just see if something feels off in your gut, something's off. And I think that's when, at least in my case, that's when I made the approach. And even then, both my kids said, no, Baba, everything's okay. Nothing's wrong, man. Nothing's wrong. And I'm like, okay, I call bullshit on this. So I took him out. I took out my daughter. She used to enjoy a cup of Starbucks once a week with her friends. So I took her to Starbucks. And when she came back, it was as if she was like a different person. She's all bubbly. She's all excited. And we're having conversations about stuff. I'm like, okay. So there was something going on. You weren't even sure, let alone ready to talk about it. Because how do you talk about something you don't understand, right? So I had to kind of take two steps across the line onto their side and sort things out. So I think that's just one huge aspect of it. The other side of that same coin is when and if a child does say something, we have such horrible, horrible societal, you know, toxic masculinity type, man up, men don't cry type of crap, especially with the boys. And with the girls, it's they double back on the girl stuff and say, oh, she's a girl, she's gonna cry about stuff. Both are extremely wrong. This is where you need to kind of sit down and have a conversation, which I still don't see a lot of parents having. I mean, I've got friends who've got kids and I've had to tell them, like, bro, when's the last time you had to sit down with your kid and talk? What do you mean? Everything is fine. I'm like, just because the kid said so? Are you sure? Yeah, he had some trouble in school, but no big deal. I'm like, no, it is a big deal. It is a big deal. And you need to go back and you need to sit with your child. You need to take him out for a drive or you need to kind of get him away from other people and other environmental variables and talk. Yeah. And you know, when you mention that, how you go back and talk to your mom, I do the same thing now. And I'll call my mom up. She lives 10 minutes. I'm like, hi, mama, what's up? Nothing. You want to go for a drive? Let's go. So I'll pick her up. We'll go for a drive. And you know, we'll talk about nothing. Sometimes we'll talk about random stuff. Sometimes we'll have like something specific. I can feel, and it's almost the same as now, like she's like my child, right? I kind of get a sense that something's wrong with mom. She didn't, I called her for something. She just didn't sound right. She sounded off. And when I asked her, mom, is everything okay? Of course it's okay. Cause you know, super mom. And parents are also expected to be like perfect.
Yeah.
So then I would take her for a drive and like, hey mom, what's going on? Let's have some tea. Let's have some kara.
Yeah.
Do you want a paratha roll to go with your tea? You know, and I'd be like, so what's going on? What's on your mind? Nothing. Oh, okay. Okay. Did anything happen? Or nothing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I stay quiet for a few minutes. And then you see that inner, I don't know, I'm not an expert in this, but I kind of almost get that like inner child coming out of her. And then she's got that story that she needs to share. And then it's nothing, honestly, most of the time, it's nothing I can even solve. But the fact that she's shared it, you know, and she's an adult, that if she could have fixed it, you probably would have. But the fact that she shares it in itself is a big relief. So I think you're 100% right. It's not just about listening, but it's also about listening to what's not even being said. So even before the listening, you got to listen and then kind of, you know, move over with it. Liam, talk to me about what you're working on now. And also, you know, if you can talk a little bit about how people can get involved.
That would be great. So basically, like, I have the Worried William Instagram page and Facebook page. It's basically, you know, at Worried William. And at the minute, the first book was released 3 years ago, but the publishers are now releasing the second edition of the first book because I've been bumped up the rankings of the publishers. And I don't know how I've suddenly become a little bit more popular. So I guess they're now releasing the second edition and rebranding it. And it's really about when the first book, the second edition, is released. The second book is coming out in October, And we've got the poem book series coming out in October. It's going to be in English and in Arabic. We've got the drawing book coming out in October as well. It's just in English. Next year, we've got the B book series, which is in English and Arabic. And parents can get involved by basically, you know, it's about reading the books and starting the conversation, you know. The books talk a lot about, you know, what I was doing at school. It wasn't always about the outcome. It's about the effort. Because when I was younger, so much of my worries had come from people judging my effort, you know, or my outcome. You know, you didn't do this. There was no full stop. There was no capital letter. So the book series and the drawings will really focus on that. It's really about a child's effort, you know, it's praising the effort, you know. And as parents, we make it very personal sometimes. So this whole project is about understanding a child who was me years ago. It's understanding the effort and understanding what they go through, the processes, because I want parents to share this vision with me, you know, that children are, you know, going through daily challenges, which are, and they're different than when I was 30 years ago. Challenges are so different now. You know, we've got technology now, we've got COVID-19 now. So we're trying to get, so parents can help me get involved by talking about, you know, even dropping me little messages to talk about their, you know, their children and some of the things that they're experiencing. But, you know, for me, the books also highlight the positives, you know. We need to stop thinking sometimes that the worry is a sad face. You know, sometimes a worry can be a happy thing. You know, when a child tells you a little bit about a worry, you know, it can be a good thing. You know, so we need to be rewarding the children about their honesty and their bravery, because, you know, because there's so many pictures now, and it's breaking that stigma. Breaking the stigma of a sad face as well. You know, so many times we see a face on the wall and it's this person, you know, crying. I know I was a bit emotional at the start there, but, you know, it's breaking the stigma. And this whole project is about breaking the stigma. And, you know, the books themselves, you know, I want to be a professional. I'm a teacher. And I teach, and I pay for because when you're a international author, you have to pay a fee for your books. And I work to pay for the fees, but I want to become a professional writer. But I'm using every single penny that I get from the books and putting it into other projects. I'm not buying cars. I'm not buying fancy gadgets. You know, I actually sold my car last year to buy a rental or to do a rental to pay for a fee for a book, because I'm not in this for the money. I'm in it to help children who are suffering and to help parents, you know. And believe it or not, people say to me, you must be a millionaire. That's not what I'm about. I'm about helping the children in our society. You know, wealth for me is not money. If I can help one child or two children or three children, that means more to me than the biggest car in the world. You know, if I can help any child, and believe it or not, we've got probably mums on board here. We've probably got dads on board who have children who are experiencing and challenges perhaps that we don't understand, but we're in this together. You know, the book series, The Worried William Project, is a collaborative project where we get together as a group on Worried William, Instagram, Facebook, or whatever. And we actually read the books, we talk about them. And when I was younger, I couldn't talk about how I was feeling. So that's how the first poem book come about, is because when I went back home a couple of years ago, I went up into the loft. In Ireland, we call it an attic. And I noticed that I was writing a lot of poems. And they were very deep poems, and they were actually poems that I had written when I was going through certain challenges. And I sent it off to the publishers, and they said, wow, let's get this published. Let's get this published. So I showed the children at school, and I said to the children at school, what do you think? You know, do you guys want to get involved? So the first poem book was created, and I've got children from all over the world who are actually involved in the poem book as well, because this Worried William project is not Liam Kelly, it's not Worried William, it's all of us, it's all the children, it's you as adults as well talking about your childhood, because we have to remember as adults, we need to be vulnerable too. You know, we need to tell sometimes our children about, you know, some of the difficulties that we experienced. And I was talking to a father just the other day at Yaz Mall, and he stopped me, and I was kind of alarmed because he said, "Are you the worried guy?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm the guy that writes the books." And I was a little bit surprised actually, because someone recognized me, and I was really embarrassed actually. And I just said, he said to me, my son's a little bit, you know, he's showing a little bit of irregular behavior, you know, he's getting a little bit mischievous. And I said to this gentleman, when's the last time that you played a video game with your son? Because we had a conversation and his son had liked video games. And I said, when was the last time you actually played a video game with your son? And he said, I haven't, you know, he's happy enough on his own. I said, try and play a video game with your son tonight, just for half an hour. And just, there's my number, text me back and tell me what you think. So the next day I got this email and he said, there's just one word, wow, amazing. The relationship had changed over the duration of 24 hours. And it was just obvious that that child had just wanted, you know, father's attention. He was possibly acting out. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a child psychologist. I'm just a man who went through worries and anxieties as a child. And I'm just giving my life experience. And that's all I'm trying to give to the parents, you know, who are listening. But one thing is for sure, as I went back before, is children love your time. You know, they love it whenever you give them that undivided time. And as Ali quite rightly said, he took his daughter to the coffee shop, opens up that dialogue. And, you know, your son or your daughter might not talk to you instantly about what's worrying them, but over time, they build up that trust and over that time. So the whole Worried William project is really about, you know, when the books come out. And over the next 14 months, we've got something like, I think there's 16 book releases, I think anyway, the publishers have got all of that organized. Over the summer, I have submitted another 12 books. I've written 12 books over the last 3 months, you know, and it's all about trying to help children with their emotional and, you know, how they're feeling. So for me, it's really about getting involved, you know, getting the books and talking to your children and starting the conversation. And, you know, and if it's okay.
What you said right there, starting the conversation, I think that's very critical. And I think what a lot of parents these days, and you rightfully said earlier how we have so much new stuff in terms of technology, and parents are kind of just, you know, alienated themselves to whatever these kids are doing on their phones. Yeah. And that's a whole different issue with, you know, what sort of accessibility and who's able to chat with your child and you should be kind of watchful for. But, you know, my daughter and my son, they watch TikTok. I install TikTok. I want to know what it's about. And now they were on Instagram. Okay, I want to be on Instagram. I want to know what that's. Oh, are you on Snapchat? Very interesting. Yeah. Well, I was on Snapchat. I want to know what's going on. So, you know, there's something happening and then they couldn't figure out how to like find a TV show on Netflix or something. And I just said, okay, guys, just do this, click here, search here, and you'll find it. I'm like, you got it? Okay, boomer. And they're like, Baba, did you just call us boomer? How do you know what boomer is? Oh, and then they look at each other. How does Baba know this stuff? These aren't his words.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is, you're right. You know, that father going home and playing that game with his kid is important because you need to connect with them in the activities they are doing. They're not going to connect with you in the activities you are doing. So you have to kind of, you know, step into that child mold and spend time with your kids in activities they enjoy. They might not make any sense to you. My son watches YouTube videos of people playing Minecraft. And I asked him, so I'm like, you can play yourself on the big screen and build stuff yourself. Why are you watching other people play? Because for me, that was like, that's just stupid, right? And then he just looked at me, you know, because I asked him like a serious question. I didn't make fun of him and say, what is this stupid stuff you're watching, right? And then he's like, well, Baba, when I watch them make something, I get ideas of how I can build something. And I'm like, so now I feel like the boomer. I think you're right. It's very important to make that connection. And in order to do that, stepping into your child's shoes, involving yourself in activities they do, whether it be video games they play or the storybooks they read. You know, a lot of the storybooks they're reading have movies. So, you know, my daughter finished reading Hunger Games. I'm like, okay, let's sit and watch Hunger Games, you know, that the movies for that. Ready Player One, I gave Abdullah, my son, the book. I'm like, look, you're going to like this. It's a little futuristic, techie type thingy. You might get a kick out of it. He loved the book. And I said, okay, guess what? There's a movie. Oh, there's a movie. I'm like, it's not as good as the book, but let's watch the movie. But now we had a little joint activity that overlapped with what, you know, what you would call their space and their view of the world and how they interact with the world. And then my space, you know? So I think bringing that together created a lot of valuable time versus everyone sitting, everyone's on their phone doing their own thing.
Yeah.
You know? So I think you're very right in saying that connecting with children in that regard is also very, very critical.
Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like, if it's okay with you, I mean, when I was 13, I started my eating disorder, it was difficult because I know it's a bit of a taboo here, you know, but I suffered a 25-year bulimia battle from the age of 13 till I was 38, and it all started because of that incident when I was 6 years old. Remember when I said people were laughing at me because I couldn't say the word look, and when I was 13, a guy had simply said a certain word or a line. He said, your t-shirt looks a bit tight. And my t-shirt probably didn't look tight, but I heard the laughter, and that worried me again, because I hadn't told anybody about that experience. So it had gone into my mindset, and my mindset was then, if people are laughing at me, there's something wrong. So I started my 25-year battle with bulimia, and it was all because I wasn't able to comprehend what emotions I was going through, and I wasn't able to talk to people about that. And, you know, it was 38 when I was finally able to say, hey, I'm Liam Kelly. I suffered from bulimia for 25 years. I'm not ashamed anymore. Because before that, the stigma, before that, people were saying, you know, you're not allowed to be a man. You're not allowed to be a man who's suffering in silence. You're not allowed to be a man who's making himself sick. I didn't want to be doing all of this. So when the publishers asked me to write a book series about my bulimia, it was very, very deep and it was very personal. And again, like you were saying, Ali, before about how can parents get involved, it's about when you read the books, it really is about understanding as a child what I was going through. Now, I know you're going to be reading about me as Liam Kelly, what I went through, but I'm a child like any other child who's going through certain challenges. And when you can understand possibly what one child is experiencing, you'll begin to understand what other children are going through. And over time, people say to me, you know, what's the biggest sign that I can look out for in my child? It's the eyes. The eyes never lie. If you look at your child in the morning, you'll know for a fact what their eyes are telling you. They might say they're fine, but their eyes might be telling you a different story. And at that point, it's not a case of you saying, you know, your eyes are telling a different story. And as Ali quite rightly said before, and I think Ali, you know, I think you proved to be like an amazing father, because you were talking about observing your children. You know, sometimes we need to watch children's interactions with others before we start commenting. You know, that's very important, because I'm a teacher. And every morning when I go into my classroom, I look at the children around me and I notice who's maybe a little bit more annoyed from the day before, who's a little bit more irritable. So, but I will watch. I won't talk to them and say, what's wrong with you, or why are you annoying someone? During the day, I will sit with the child who I think might be the most vulnerable, and I'll say, oh my goodness, I'm so tired, you know. Oh, I'm so tired today. Build trust. Build trust. Let the child know you're understanding what they're going through. Because I tell you this, and I'm not lying to you, and I wouldn't lie to anybody in this group, is that, you know, when you're a child and you're going through certain challenges, all you want is someone just to say, I understand you. You know, I'm here for you. Because, you know, every day in my classroom, there's at least one child, or maybe two children, or three perhaps, that might have come from, they might have seen mom and dad arguing. They might have, you know, they might be going through an eating disorder. We don't know. And sometimes school might be a safe haven for them. So you need to watch what they're saying and just be very mindful of your questions, you know, because you might say to that child, why are you doing that? But they might be doing that to get your attention. So your questioning is very important. Your reaction is very important, because I think in society today, we're very reactive and our reactions are instant. And I think, you know, when I walk around the mall sometimes, and I'm not judging parents at all, and I'm not, but sometimes I see a lot of reaction straight away. You know, the child possibly wants mom's attention for a different reason, but straight away there's a reaction. And that child then will continue their behavior, and it will continue to the point where there's a battle. And when there's a battle, what's the point? You know, you have to stop. There has to be a stoppage of somewhere. But like, I'm going to tell you a little story about a little boy in my class a few years ago. Obviously, I won't mention a name because of child privacy and confidentiality. And he had come into my class, and I had known him as being one of the, he was notorious. He was quite, and I hate this term, naughty. I hate the term naughty. You know, he was naughty. I don't like that term. He was very, you know, mischievous and whatever. He come into my class, and, you know, he had shown signs that he was possibly not following the rules, and I observed him. And so him and I went for a little walk one day. I asked him to come and to help me carry some books from the store cupboard. And we just had a little walk. We were talking about general things and TV and stuff that he likes, you know. And over the next 2 or 3 days, we started to build up a little relationship, you know, what he likes. And you know, within a month, that little boy started talking to me. You know, his behavior started to change. And the reason is because I was understanding and believing in him. And I believed in him, and that I believed that he wasn't a bad person. You know, he just wanted these two things here. He just wanted me to listen to him. And from the moment that I started listening to him, and I started, he loved certain, as you were saying before, YouTube people. And I'm not really big into YouTubers. So I started to follow these YouTubers, and I was saying, yeah, this YouTuber last night. And one day I come in and he's like, what? And I was like, yeah. I was watching him last night. And he loved that, because I had taken time to actually follow his interest. And that year, him and I had a great relationship, because I took an interest. And it didn't take a lot of time for me to follow a YouTuber for 2 minutes every night. You know, I just, every couple of minutes every night. And, you know, that's what sometimes children just need, a little bit of understanding. You know, I loved aeroplanes as a child, but I never admitted it to people. I could have watched aeroplanes coming in and out. But I never admitted it to people, because people might have thought, what's wrong with this guy? But I talk about it in my classroom to children. I say, you know, when I see an aeroplane coming in, I'm like, whoa, that's a 777, or that's an A380. And the kids are like, whoa, okay, Mr. Liam likes A380s. And they get involved with me. But they talk to me then about their interests. And then there's a relationship starting to be built. You know, but years ago, when I was at school, that didn't happen. You know, it was just a strict, you have to sit down, you have to do this, you have to get 10 out of 10, you know. And in my classroom, if you get 1 out of 10, as long as you give me your best effort, that's as good as 10 out of 10. Your effort is what's important to me, because we don't know what's going on inside a child's mind. And my whole project is really about, you know, is what I went through as a child and how we can help our children. But I'm Liam Kelly. I'm one person. I can't do it on my own. We're a group of people, and we have to do it together. We have to share our experiences, and we have to know that we're not alone. We have children of determination. We have children who worry. Every child in our city is important. And in my classroom, every child is valued, and every child succeeds. It doesn't matter who they are, what country they're from, whatever. Every child in my class succeeds, because I know what they can succeed with. I believe in them. And children will succeed if you believe in them and if you listen to them and understand them. So for me, all I want to say is, and I know I've talked a lot here, and you know, but I know how it feels to be that child that worries. I know how it feels to go through, you know, the emotions and the crying at night. But when you leave this chat room tonight, you go to your son or your daughter and you give them the biggest hug that you can possibly give them, because that will be the greatest gift you can give them today. So thank you for listening. And I'm sorry if I talked too much.
No, this was great. This was great, Liam. Thank you very much for sharing. Thank you for being brave. It takes a lot. I understand. I know a lot of valuable insight. I think a lot that we're all going to walk away with, whether it's, you know, our relationship to our children or our relationship to our parents and vice versa. I think a lot of it is, you know, kind of simply boils down to just being brave enough and being patient enough to listen and to connect and open up those dialogues and not think of the stigma that society has created for us. We're still fighting the stigma across so many facets of mental health. And, you know, In that equation, we have a child who doesn't understand what's going on, who doesn't have the resources to Google what anxiety might mean, even, right? They're just experiencing that terrible, horrible feeling. Thanks, man. This was awesome. I really, really, really appreciate your time. This was very, very nice. Thank you so much. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week with another talk. Don't forget tomorrow's Wellness Circle, and we are doing an in-person face-to-face meeting tomorrow. So if you're interested, look us up on Meetup or on our Instagram. You can find the details. Once again, thank you very much, Liam. God bless everybody. Be safe. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Cheers.